Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 5, Episode 13 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we are talking about the history of the NABBA Mr. Universe contest on Season 5 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And today we're going to be joined again by Wayne Galash. We did a two-part interview with Wayne when he was in Florida recently, just a couple weeks ago, and he came to my recording studio in Tampa, Florida, which is in my house. And Wayne sat down with me at the computer, and we talked about the history of the NABBA universe. So we're not going to go all the way up to the present day, but we did start at the beginning of this season. We started talking about the history of the NABBA universe in 1950 when Steve Reeves won the very first NABBA universe contest. And we went all the way up to about the 70s, the mid-70s. And then last week, we talked about the NABBA Universe winners from 1976 to 1980. And today we're going to talk about the NABBA Universe winners from 1981 all the way up until 1990. So we're going to cover like 10 years of competitions. And we're going to talk about some really, really great competitors who competed during that time. Some really great guys came out in the 1980s, including Lance Dreher and Tim Belknap and Jeff King, John Brown. So we're going to talk about all those guys today. So it's going to be a great interview. All right, I do want to mention we are brought to you by Redcon One. At Redcon One, everyone wants to be a champion and everyone wants to be the best. But at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or you're running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and the carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. And they also have now the MRE bars in lots of different flavors. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And you can enter the discount code LEGENDS to let them know that you are a listener of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And you'll get 15% discount off your order at redcon1.com. And I was just watching Aaron Singerman's broadcast yesterday. He does a live broadcast on Saturdays. And they had the transformation contest winners, and he gave $10,000 to the winner. So that was pretty awesome. So Redcon One is making it happen. So go check them out at redcon1.com. And we're also brought to you by my sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand that I use to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe contest. And they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the new 2018 Arnold Classic Physique Champion. And he's also the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia Champion. They also sponsor Sergio Oliva Jr. And Tom Platz is now on board. And Samir Benoot, 1983 Mr. Olympia. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 when you go to oldschoollabs.com, and you'll get 12% off your order. And check out their new Brawn Vintage Protein, B-R-A-W-N. You will really love that. It's made from whole food sources like beef, eggs, and milk, and I use it every day. I really love it. So go to oldschoollabs.com, and like I said, use that discount code LEGENDS12, and you'll get 12% off your order. All right, so what's going on in your world, guys? This is now April, and tax season is coming up. I spent all my week getting my taxes ready. I had sort of a head cold this week, but it was my light week, my deload week, I call it, for my workouts. So it really didn't interfere with my workouts. If you know anything about that MP6 workout program I follow, after every mass and power cycle, I usually do a deload week where I just go to the gym and just use like really light weights, so usually half the weight I normally use. So it's a real good break physically and mentally. But I did my last heavy leg workout last week on Easter. And then the day after that, we went in and did our light workout. But then after the light workout, I did the high intensity cardio, HIIT cardio. We did it on an exercise bike and I just killed it for like only 10 cycles, which is only 10 minutes because I go super hard for 20 seconds, like a sprint, and then a 40 second easy ride. And ended up, I guess, with that and the leg workout together, just blew me out. And I just had a head cold like all week. Swollen glands for a couple of days. So I just really took it easy. Went in the gym and still did my light workouts, but really just kind of took it easy. I want to get in shape for Memorial Day weekend because I'm going out to Venice, California. Old School Labs is sending me out there to do some interviews with some of the golden era champions. They have a big contest on Venice Beach on Memorial Day weekend. On Memorial Day, actually, on that Monday. So I'll be out there for that. And I want to do some photo shoots this summer, as I mentioned before. So I got to keep the diet going. So I've been pretty good on the diet. The waist is going down slightly a little bit each week. So that's good because I want to hold on to the muscle as I lose the fat. I don't want to lose the weight too quickly, keep my strength up. And though everything's going good, I should be in shape, I think, by probably July, I'm thinking. Because, you know, when you get a little old, it takes some time to lose the fat. But my new book that I've been talking about for a while called The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, it finally is finished. The cover is being worked on right now. So I don't know when it'll be done. I have to go through all the revisions with Amazon.com, but I'm guessing sometime this week. Send me an email if you're interested to naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I'll give you the information. But we will have it on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. So you can catch it on there, or you can get it directly off of Amazon. And if you're friends with me on Facebook or on Instagram, I'll announce it on there as well. So it turned out really well. I just was checking it out the other day in the book format, and it really looks cool. The pictures are really good, and it's pretty big. It's almost 200 pages. So there's a lot of information in there for anyone who wants to get ready for a competition. I try to cover all the bases, including, of course, the diet, the training, how you add the isolation exercises when you're getting ready for a competition, and how to do all that without overtraining, because it's taken from a natural bodybuilder's perspective. So you have to really take into account the recuperation aspect when you increase your cardio and you're dieting and you're taking in less calories. But I cover everything. I cover the posing. I cover what you can expect from the prejudging, what to do the last week, how to do that peak week. So I cover it all, and it's called The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. So it should be a really good book when it comes out. And I've been busy with my new website, dadbodtoripbod.com. I'm getting a lot of consultations, so I've been doing that. We should have some really good success stories coming up because some of these guys have sent me their before pictures. So I worked on a few of those this week. So I'm looking forward to these guys making great progress. You know, usually when you get out of shape like that, and especially if you haven't been training regularly, you've been off the gym, like the one guy I've been helping out, I just wrote up his program the other day. He hasn't been training for like 6 months and he really let himself go. So he's dedicated to the program now. He's going to really follow this thing 100% for the next 90 days. And I think he's going to make great progress even in the first week. So I love seeing the progress these guys make. Their progress pictures are amazing when you look at from like when they start to even 4 weeks in. It's just unbelievable. This will be our last episode for season 5 where we talk about the NABBA universe because I think we've covered the bases. This is now 13 episodes, so this will be our longest season yet. I'm hoping to get an interview with Jim Haislop. We were supposed to interview Jim. He's won, the 1968 AAU Mr. America, and he competed in the 1969 Mr. Universe against Boyer Coe, and he lost to Boyer Coe for the NABBA universe. But Jim lives right out here in Tampa, and he was supposed to interview with us, but he had to get some surgery on his teeth. So he is still interested in doing it, so I'll keep at him. So when we get that, we'll add that to this NABBA Mr. Universe series. But starting next week, we're going to start a Mr. Olympia series, and we're going to talk about the history of the Mr. Olympia contest. So we're going to start with the 1965 and 1966 Mr. Olympias that Larry Scott won. And as our guest for the shows, we're going to talk to Jerry Branum. And Jerry is a bodybuilding historian himself. He's been around the sport for a long time. He used to work out with Arnold back at Gold's Gym, or work out with the Arnold crew, I should say, back at Gold's Gym back in the 70s. And Jerry was also a writer for Ironman magazine, and has a column for a long time. He was there long before I was there. And now he has his own newsletter magazine, like an internet magazine. So we'll talk about that next week when we talk to Jerry. But Jerry's been at just about every Mr. Olympia contest there was, I think. So I think he was at those early ones, so we're going to get his perspective. I also want to talk to John Balick because I think John was also around during that time, and Roger Schwab was also around during that time. So we're going to talk to all three of these guys and get their perspectives. First, we'll talk about the 1965 Olympia, and then we'll talk about the 1966 Olympia. And those are Mr. Olympia contests that are rarely discussed. Those are the ones that Larry Scott won. And 1966 was pretty notable because that was the year that Sergio Oliva first competed. And I don't even think Sergio took second. I think Harold Poole was second to Larry Scott both years. But Sergio came out in 1967 looking unbelievable. And then he dominated the Mr. Olympia contest for 3 years straight. It's going to be great perspective where we talk about that early Mr. Olympia contest. You don't hear it talked about that much. So it should be a great interview with the three guys who were actually there at the show. And I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. Do you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, and burn fat to balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential? If you do, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They have a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few additional reasons to give them a call. So you can contact them at their website at flalternativemeds.com. That's Florida Alternative Meds. Their website is flalternativemeds.com. Or you can call them at their office at 813-922-8939. Again, that's 813-922-8939. They have an office here in Tampa, Florida, but they will work with anybody across the United States. So be sure to give them a call. And they will be at the Orlando Europa contest this coming weekend in Orlando, Florida. They'll be there out there on Saturday and Sunday, and I will be there. I will be at their booth for Florida Alternative Medicine. So if you guys are in the area, you want to stop by and say hi, I will be around in Orlando, Florida next weekend at the Florida Alternative Medicine booth. Give them a call. You can use the promotion code LEGEND, and you'll get a free consultation, and you'll get 20% off any packages you order. So just tell them that you listen to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and use the code LEGENDS, and then they will give you a discount. All right. So here is our interview with Wayne Galash, and we are going to talk about the history of the NABMA Mr. Universe, and we're going to wrap up this series. So we're going to talk about from 1981 all the way up until 1990. So enjoy. Here we go. So we're in 1982 now. John Brown comes back and wins again. Now, this is unusual, Wayne, because John wins the amateur universe 2 years in a row. He didn't have to go pro. So I don't know why they let him do that. I think he did mention that in my interview with him.
Yeah, I'd like to know the reason, too, because it was really, I don't think it was ever done before, because Arnold won his amateur and then he immediately only went in the pro division. So I can't think of any other occasion that this happened. And did John have an answer as to why he could do it?
I'm not really sure. I'll have to go back and listen to the interview, but I think he did mention that. He said he didn't want to do the pro. He wanted to stay amateur. So they let him win, and he won it 2 years in a row as an amateur. But he did mention how he knew back then. John's a really smart guy as far as marketing goes. And he knew, you know, he wasn't doing well in the AAU, and he felt some of it might have been prejudiced because he was black. I don't know if that's true or not, but for whatever reason, he wasn't doing well out there, and he couldn't make a name for himself in America. So when Serge Nubre invited him to compete over in Europe, and that's where he really gained his niche. But he knew that winning the Mr. Universe title would be something that he could use to market himself for the rest of his life, and that was true. And so that's why it was so important for him to, I think, want to win this title again, and maybe that's why he didn't want to turn pro.
I agree with most of that, and I think there might have been one other reason. He might have said to the promoter, Oscar Heidenstam, look, I want to defend my amateur title. Mm-hmm. I want to see if there's anyone out there who's good enough to beat me as an amateur. And no doubt the promoter must have said, well, okay, nobody's asked to do this before, but okay, if you want to do it, put yourself on the line. And that must be the reason that he put himself on the line in the amateur division again, and he was good enough to win it. So that would be a good question for John. I don't know if he gave enough detail on that. I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah. Well, I want to mention he beat Rufus Howard. Now, we were talking about the Mr. America winners coming over to the NABA. Now, in 1982, that was when they had the split between the AAU and the MPC. So obviously, if you were with the MPC, which just started that year in 1982, if you won the MPC Nationals, you would go over and compete in the IFBB Mr. Universe. But the AAU was more affiliated with the NABBA. So if you were in the AAU Mr. America, then you would come over and compete in NABBA. And so Rufus Howard was the overall winner at the 1982 AAU Mr. America. And he came over and he competed against John Brown and got second place. And then there were some other guys from the USA. So now we got some more competitors. Mike Sable, who was in the medium class, the zipper, because he had the legs. And
Eddie
Giuliani, who was an old IFBB Mr. World, I think.
Yes, right. I remember him winning it. I'm sure he was a class winner in the Mr. America.
Yeah.
1 year when I was at that event in Los Angeles.
Yeah. So Eddie goes back into competition. He had to be pretty old at that point, but he goes back to competition in 1982 and competes in the Mr. Universe. But I want to mention the medium class because we just mentioned the name John Torelli from Australia. And John won the medium class at the 1982 Mr. Universe, beating Ian Dow. And Vince Brown, another excellent bodybuilder, was third. And then Mike Sable from the USA was fourth.
Yes, this was John Torelli's, big win outside of Australia, I would say, because he won at the Sydney Opera House in 1980 in an IFBB event. And here he is winning his class at the NABBA Universe. And there's hardly been any Australians to win their class at the Universe. I'll have to check my history on this, but he was possibly the first to win his class, or there may have been other people that lived in Australia that represented Australia and may have won prior to this. But it was a huge breakthrough for John Torelli, and he received great accolades for this, being an Australian to come up here and get second in the world in his class with NABBA.
And how was the rest of the class there, Wayne? Ian Dow, I mean, I've seen pictures of him competing in the IFBB, and Vince Brown had a really good V-shape, right? Real big arms.
Yeah. Well, what you said about Vince Brown is correct. He had a fantastic V-shape and a very thick physique. Mm-hmm. Ian Dow was another guy who did well in the IFBB, and he did well in both organizations and was always around the top. He had a classic physique with a tiny waist. And then Mike Sable, the zipper, well, he was just a unique physique. He had great legs, he had good stage presence, and he had charisma.
And then there's another name in there, Jesse Coutreau, who was in the Mr. America that year. And Jesse was sixth place, according to this list here, in the medium class.
Yeah, Jesse was a physique that I don't think got enough publicity. Mm-hmm. He had a wonderful physique, and he didn't seem to have a long career.
No.
And I think that if he'd stayed the distance a bit longer, he probably would have got some really top placings at this type of competition.
Yeah, he always competed in the AAU. So I think when the MPC and the AAU had their split, I think the MPC was obviously getting more publicity because they were associated with the IFBB. But, he was always an AAU guy.
And Eddie Giuliani told me he'd been in so many contests that he had a garage full of trophies and that he had an overflow of trophies as well. And I can't remember how many he said he had. I think it was in the vicinity of about 150 trophies.
Wow. And then Terry Phillips won the short class that year too.
Terry was very consistent.
Yeah. All right, so now we go over to the professional division in the NABBA Universe in 1982. And we've got the first win by Eduardo Kowak, who was, set the record, right, for NABBA Mr. Universe wins.
He set the record for he achieved five victories, and Eddie Irwin achieved five victories as well. But Eddie holds an edge with the record because Eddie did it 5 years in a row, and Ed Kowak did it over a period of more than 5 years. Hmm. So they were both great champions, and poor old Cal Skellack had to strike Ed Kowak.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about Cal Skellack because he was always one of my favorite competitors. So you got a chance to see him in person,
As
I did at the 78 Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
So Cal was had a split with the IFBB after the 1978 Olympia, and then he just competed over in he competed in the WABA organization with Serge Nubray. And Sergio, I remember he did that in 80 and 81. So now in 82, he makes his debut at the NABBA Universe.
When they came out on stage, I thought it was going to be Cal Skellack for sure to win this class, but I was probably a little bit influenced by the publicity surrounding Cal, and I must say I didn't really know Ed Kowak that well, and Roy Jabal was always there, right in the top three. He got third. But Ed Kowak, how did he beat Cal? That's a very good question. I think Ed Kowak was extremely strong in every single body part. And he was massive and very compact physique. And Cal Skellack, he had a physique that was striking. Possibly the judges felt there were a couple of little weaknesses and that Ed Kowak was judged as being the better overall physique. So it had to be close. But I did think that Skellack was going to win.
Oh, really? Okay. That's good to hear. Because he was always one of my idols. So Cal probably had the better upper body, right? His legs were a little weaker.
Yes. And obviously, too, Kowak had amazing legs. And he always had a very hard, rock-hard midsection, even though he got bigger and bigger, I believe. So he had a very good package. It was hard to fault. Cal had more excitement and style and charisma, but it wasn't enough to beat the total package that Kowak presented.
Yeah, Kowak, I remember when I saw him when I was, because again, I was young when he was winning these competitions, he had kind of a crazy physique. Like, you didn't really see that kind of physique before. It was so developed, almost reminiscent of the way the bodybuilders look today. But back then, it was unusual to see a guy so developed with such huge legs, too. In all body parts, and he had really freaky abs because they were like an eight pack, but they almost like stuck out a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's the word. He had a freaky physique, and it had huge impact. And I think whenever he walked out on stage, he immediately had everybody's attention, and all eyes were on him. He was that sort of a physique. But what is interesting, he did have a number of journeys into the IFBB throughout his career, and he never placed very well. And I'm not sure whether they didn't like him because of his NABBA background or whether he just didn't have the look that they were looking for. But I was shocked that he never did very well with his IFBB contests.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of Bertel Fox. You know, he's so incredible at his NABBA wins. And you think, looking at the pictures of when he won those universe wins in NABBA, that when he went over to the IFBB, he would clean up even at the Olympia. And he would beat all these top guys from the Olympia or from the IFBB. But it doesn't turn out that way, really. And Bertel didn't do that well. And even Eduardo Kowak, which a lot of people, I remember talking to Samir Banut, and Samir said that Eduardo Kowak always got overlooked. He should have placed much higher than he did.
Well, that's a part of the answer then why he didn't seem to do well in the IFBB. So that's another story we'll talk about in a moment when we talk about Charles Claremont, because he suffered the same fate. But getting back to this contest here, we're now on to 1983.
Right. So now this was a big year for the Mr. America that year, and the winner of that contest was one of the best Mr. America winners ever, Jeff King from the East Coast. And Jeff had just an amazing physique, huge upper body, legs probably right up there on par with Tom Platz. That's how freaky his legs were. Huge neck, huge arms. So Jeff King comes in, and now look at this, Wayne. John Brown goes in for his third amateur Mr. Universe, but he gets beat by Jeff King.
Yes, I hadn't thought about this before, that was his third amateur Universe, and of course he was trying to go for another victory. But in this particular year, I think Jeff King was a very clear winner, and that's no disrespect to John Brown, who still had the wonderful gifts that had won the event for him the previous 2 years, but Jeff King just jumped over the top of him to a new level, and I don't think Jeff King ever looked any better than he looked in the 1983. And you described the package he had: huge legs, abs, depth, thickness, muscularity, condition. He was awesome.
Yeah, and you were one of the lucky ones to see him compete, Wayne, because he didn't compete for very long. He only lasted a couple of years, and I believe he had a car accident or something that hurt his neck, and I think that's why he couldn't compete anymore.
He did do two NABBA Pro Universes.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yes,
okay.
But he had a short career, and he couldn't quite bring back that look that he had in 1983, in my opinion. And I had him for a seminar and guest posing in Adelaide, South Australia, I think it was 1984, and he packed the place out, and he was simply incredible, and he was very good to listen to.
So if you look at this lineup, too, from the amateur division in 83, you could see there was a lot of bodybuilders competing in the AAU still, and I think the division was made between the AAU and the MPC, where a lot of guys were sticking with the AAU, a lot of guys were sticking with the MPC, because looking at this lineup here, we got a lot more Americans. You got Mike Sable coming back in the short class. He's from the USA. Larry Bernstein, who was from Illinois, I remember him. Really good short bodybuilder. He was in there. In the medium class, you had Robert Reese, who was a big AAU competitor. You had John Brown, of course, from America, but also Marty Varanikar, who was in the tall class. He was in third place. He was another big AAU competitor.
Yeah, so 1983 was a good year for the American competitors.
Yeah.
They were making a comeback of sorts compared to around about 1980 when we commented that there weren't hardly any in there at all. So this was starting to come back. And, of course, with Jeff King being, I think, one of the most impressive and dominant overall amateur winners that I've ever seen.
Wow. And then you got Vince Brown winning the medium class and then Terry Phillips again winning the short class.
Yeah. I have to say, poor Terry. He was always so close that he was winning classes, but he never got that overall NABBA Amateur Universe title. And he passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, did he?
Okay. Yeah, to the professional of 1983.
All right, so now we go to the pro division of 83, and Eduardo Kowak wins his second win. Cal Scalak is not in it this year, but Ian Lawrence moves up to second. Rufus Howard was a former Mr. America winner. He goes third, and then Bill Richardson fourth.
Yes, and then there's Robert Jodkiewicz, and there he is making, I think, his first
NABBA Universe
appearance. He comes in at fifth. But Ed Kowak, well, Ian Lawrence was very, very good. But again, I have to use the word, Ed Kowak just overpowered him because he had the size, the mass, and Ian Lawrence had the condition and the shape, but he couldn't compete with Ed Kowak when it came to the number one position.
Yeah, Kowak was another guy that I remember me and my friends reading the magazines, and we were freaked out by him, just like we were with Bertel Fox years before that. Just another massive, freaky physique that, like, wow, look at these guys who are competing over in England. Another couple names I got to mention, John Citroni was in seventh, and Paul Winter, like the great bodybuilder from the 60s, competing in 1983, took last place, but still Paul Winter coming back at the Mr. Universe.
Well, I guess it was a comeback for Paul Winter.
Yeah.
But his best days were, well, they were past, and John Citroni was still coming up at this stage, and so he took seventh, and Bill Hemsworth, who was a great NABBA competitor, he was in there at sixth, and Bill Richardson was in at fourth. So the top three or the top four were all pretty outstanding guys who all had very good placings in the NABBA universe. I think the fans will enjoy this discussion because these years have never been discussed.
I know. They should enjoy it.
This is the first.
Right. All right, Wayne, now let's go to 1984. And I've seen your video of this, so I've seen this contest on video. So another couple great class winners in the amateur division. Brian Buchanan wins the overall and the tall class. Mike Quinn, who went on to become a really famous IFBB Mr. Universe winner, IFBB Pro winner, I should say.
Yeah.
He wins the medium class. And Tim Belknap, who won the Mr. America in 1981, he comes in and wins the short class. So talk about three great class winners, huh?
Well, Tim Belknap, we didn't see enough of his physique, in my opinion. He had a freaky look. He grabbed the audience attention when he came out on stage. There was something special about him. He had a unique character, and he came across as powerful, and you just had to look at him. And some of his shots were very, very strong shots. And then you've got Mike Quinn, and at that time I never expected he was going to become a great IFBB star. But then I didn't know a lot about Mike, but he had huge potential and beautiful, clean lines and a fantastic upper body in particular.
Yeah, let's talk about Belknap, because me being from Illinois, I saw Belknap win the 1980 Mr. Illinois and then win the 1981 Mr. Midwest. And this guy was just, if you could have seen him at that time, back in the early 1980s, talk about a freak. I mean, there's a lot of guys who look like him now, but back in 1980, there was nobody that looked like him. And Belknap had, again, Tom Platz-like legs. Yeah. Huge legs, just freaky, freaky looking. And there was just nobody like him. I remember Sergio Oliva, how impressed he was when he saw Tim Belknap. And when Joe Weider saw Belknap, he immediately sent him out to California to do a photo shoot, which is every bodybuilder's dream, that Joe Weider's going to find you and bring you out to California and do a photo shoot with you. Mm-hmm. And then Belknap went on and won the 1981 Mr. America contest. But he never really had a career in the IFBB. So I think after a couple disappointing years trying to compete as a pro, because he was kind of blocky. He was freaky, but he was blocky. And so then he went over to the NABBA Universe, and this was his first NABBA Universe, and he had great success. And I'm glad you mentioned the audience reaction, Wayne, because one thing I'll never forget is I saw the pre-judging of this contest that you have on video or DVD now. And when he came out, he was at the end of the lineup. And I remember the bodybuilders were coming out one by one, and they were introducing him. And this was at the pre-judging. And then he comes out, and he's all the way at the end, and you could hear the audience go, whoa! Like, they were just freaking out.
Yeah, the audience reaction to Belknap was always incredible. A lot of people just couldn't believe this sort of physique. And as you said, he was freaky, and he was good freaky because the judges liked him, and he had a pretty good overall package. Maybe just a little bit wide in the waist, mm-hmm. but everything was so amazing that you had to say, this guy's going to be number one.
Yeah, he was about 5'4", and he must have weighed at least 215 pounds. Yeah. So now in the NABBA, they have the height classes. They don't have weight classes. So he's competing at 5'4" as a true heavyweight against these short guys, and he made them look like little boys.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because with the height class, and if you're massive, and you're 5'6" or under, that was the short class limit at that time, he almost looked like he was from another planet compared to some of those other competitors.
Yeah, and he was in shape. I mean, freaky vascularity. And, of course, we know that now that he's a diabetic and he was using insulin, and this was before bodybuilders were using insulin, so maybe that had to do with some of his incredible development. But he was unbelievable back then.
Yes, and a pity, as you said, that he didn't have a longer career, because I enjoyed seeing him and I would have liked to have seen a lot more of him.
Yeah. In the medium class then, Mike Quinn. Now, this is an interesting story because they had the AAU Mr. America a couple weeks before the NABBA Universe, and Joe Miko was the winner there. And Mike Quinn only took, I think, third place in the medium height class at the Mr. America. So then they go to the Mr. Universe, and Mike Quinn wins with Joe Miko in second and Richard Roy in third place and Abe Cuesta in fifth place. Now, Abe Cuesta and Joe Miko both beat Mike Quinn at the America, but at the Universe, Mike Quinn looks, well, he probably improved his condition, or he just got a bad deal at the America.
Well, I think he improved his condition, to be honest, although I don't know much about that Mr. America, but I thought he was in outstanding condition. And he had an ability to project himself as a winner. And that's a special talent that you need. And Mike Quinn was very confident and assured. He looked like a winner, acted like a winner, and he was just a little bit too good for Joe Miko, who was also extremely impressive. And I worked with Joe Miko doing film and photos, and he was outstanding. But Mike Quinn came across as the winner, and that's how it turned out.
Yeah, Mike had one of those physiques that when he hit a pose, his body just exploded. He had great arms, he had great back, and he was a really good poser, as you said, especially when he got to pick his own music. He did some really, really good, exciting posing routines, and I thought he got a raw deal at the Mr. America. But one thing I think Mike said in one of the interviews was he said the European judges preferred massive upper bodies. Do you agree with that, Wayne? Do you think, looking at the NABBA Universe history, do you agree that a lot of the judges prefer guys who have massive upper bodies like Mike?
I tend to agree with that, but I'm also going to say that the judging was very good and very fair. But that's not to say, though, that massive upper bodies may not have swayed them a little bit in a close decision, because I know when I was judging, if a guy had fantastic arms and everything else was about equal, then that would sway me. So that's part of a massive upper body. So I think that was an important factor, although I think the factor of symmetry was always very important with Nava as well. But massive upper bodies just tend to sway anyone. They impress you. They grab your attention.
Yeah. Well, speaking of massive upper bodies, we got to talk about Brian Buchanan, because this is the first time he really came on the international scene. He's from London, or he's from England. And Brian, if you're not aware of him, had one of the smallest waists ever in the history of bodybuilding. It looked like it was 23 inches. But when he hit a front double bicep, the crowd just was, just shocked, because he had this great upper body, good V shape, big arms, big thighs. But his waist was so tiny, it was, talk about freaky. So he easily won his class, the tall class, and then he won the overall.
Yes, he did easily win his class. But the guy who was runner-up, Ronald Matz from Germany, had a fantastic physique. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible. Thickness, shape, he had everything. Any other year, Ronald Matz would have taken that class and probably the overall for 1984. But Brian Buchanan was a freak. A genetic freak with this wonderful waist, best V-shaped taper I think I've ever seen. I'll compare him with the best ever, along with Sergio. And when he came out on stage again, people just couldn't believe it. What they were seeing was something that they had not seen before. And there was no surprise when he won the class, and then he went on to win overall. And Mike Quinn, I don't think, was hard done by not winning the overall, because Brian was such a freak and a unique physique.
How about Belknap? How did he stack up next to Brian and Mike Quinn?
Well, as you said, Belknap's shape, when you get into comparisons with other bodybuilders, he maybe didn't have the perfect overall shape. He was just very impressive, and he had all the attributes that you said, but Belknap was going to find it hard to beat a person such as a Brian Buchanan, for example.
Okay. Yeah, I think nobody could beat that symmetry. I mean, that shape, yeah, with that tiny waist, and especially the shock value. Yeah. If this was his first international contest and people weren't aware of him, yeah, I mean, it just had to be shock for both the judges and the audience.
Exactly correct. And Brian was around for a few years, and later on he lived a few years in Australia.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. In the pro division that year in 1984, Eduardo Coac wins his third Mr. Universe. And Filippo Massaroni from Italy takes second. Lance Dreyer makes his debut in the Nava Universe, because he comes over from the IFBB after winning the 1981 Mr. Universe in the IFBB. And Lance had a really impressive physique also. I'm aware of him because he was also from the Chicago area. He takes third. Rufus Howard takes fourth. Bill Richardson fifth. And then Roy Duval was sixth.
Okay, well, talking about the top two, Edward Coac. Well, Massaroni was a good physique. Coac was a great physique. I think that's all I really need to say there. And with Lance Dreyer, he was the new guy to Nava. Getting third against those two was pretty good. I would say it was close with Lance Dreyer and Massaroni. And the other guys are all excellent, but Edward Coac just stood out head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, Lance, for those who aren't aware of him, he had a freaky physique too, because he had those massive arms and another good V-shape, kind of actually maybe a little blocky in the waist, short legs, but real good massive arms and a really good back.
Yeah, and he had charisma too. He was great on stage, and I always enjoyed seeing Lance Dreyer on stage, because I felt he really lit up the stage. So he provided entertainment, in my opinion, as well as a great physique.
Was that the first time you ever saw him, Lance Dreyer?
I saw Lance Dreyer in the 1982 Olympia. And,
oh, yeah.
And the judges didn't seem to rate him as highly as I did. And so that wasn't a great Olympia for Lance. So it was great to see him on the Nava stage.
All right, so now we go over to 85, and Belknap comes back, and Belknap wins his first Nava Universe in the amateur division.
Yeah.
Ronald Matz, who you were just talking about, he wins the tall class over Charles Clermont, another fantastic physique. Eugene Lavascount was in, he wins the medium class, but Belknap wins over Larry Bernstein, another Chicago resident. He wins the short class, and then Belknap wins the overall.
Well, we'll talk about Tim Belknap. Larry Bernstein was a very good physique, but Tim Belknap, well, I think you've said it all. He had so much going for him that he just powered through this class and dominated it from the moment he walked on stage. So then you go to Eugene Lavascount, a top British physique, a black physique, outstanding. And he took the medium class. And then you've got Ronald Matz, who I said was so good a few moments ago, and this time he wins the tall class. And he was too mature at this stage for a fairly young Charles Claremont.
So this was probably Claremont's first NAVA Universe competition,
yeah,
right?
I believe it was. And looking at the photos, Charles looked a bit smooth this particular year, and he greatly improved his condition in the future years after this particular one.
Was this an easy win for Belknap, you think?
Yes, I believe it was very clear, very comfortable. And it was no surprise to people because he was a great crowd favorite. And I think the judges also agreed with the crowd. He was the best man there.
All right. So now we go over to the pro division and Colac wins. Now, is this his third or fourth?
Yes.
We're losing track because he wins so many in a row.
Yeah, third or fourth, maybe fourth. And he's up against Brian Buchanan.
Okay.
So you had the beautiful physique of Brian Buchanan and the Herculean physique of Ed Carwack. So if you're a judge, who are you going to give it to?
Yeah, I probably would have chose Buchanan, but the judges went with Carwack with the freakiness.
Correct. They went with the mass. Was the mass with definition, because that's what he had. Probably Carwack, again, would have won it on legs.
Mm-hmm.
Buchanan's legs weren't bad, but Carwack's legs were brilliant.
Yeah, Buchanan always got a little criticized, I think, because his legs never stood up to that incredible upper body. And Colac did have incredible legs, especially for that time in the 80s.
And Lance Dreher was, again, a very good third-place finisher. And Masseroni fourth. Dave Johns came back again. Dave Johns took fifth with Hubert Metz from Germany. He was a tall and a rip type of physique, but he didn't have the wide shoulder look that is pretty important to place high. And I'm wondering with Dave Johns, this is 1985, I don't think he could have competed for too many more years after this.
Yeah, because he passed away in the 80s, right?
Yes, I think so. It was in the 80s.
And Hubert Metz won the 1980 Mr. Universe in the IFBB. So he was now coming over, like many of these bodybuilders did, after not competing successfully in the IFBB, they now go over and they compete in the NAVA Universe.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to 1986. And this was the last year I was a NAVA judge at the Universe.
Oh, really? Okay.
The reason being that I wanted to be behind a video camera at the pre-judging. And you can't be judging and doing video at the same time. So I said that this was the last year. And I had a friend of mine who did the videotaping of the prejudging for me. So this was the very last year I had the honor of being a judge.
Hmm. So Charles Claremont, who we were just talking about, who went on to become an amazing physique, one of the best physiques I've ever seen, I think. Charles wins the overall at the NAVA Universe. He wins the tall class, and he beats out Mike Antorino. And Mike won the 85 AAU Mr. America. So he didn't go over to the Mr. Universe in 85, but he did go over in 86, and he did really well. He got second place, and he beat out Ronald Matz in third place.
Yes, this was a mildly controversial class. I say that because Mike Antorino had fantastic condition, and he was ripped, and he had pretty good symmetry. But Charles Claremont had an extra... He had like an X factor about him, and his arms were so much better, for example, than Mike Antorino's. And so it came down to condition versus size and everything I saw in Charles Claremont. And I agonized over that decision, and I gave my first place to Charles Claremont. And it turned out that it was a fairly narrow victory, I recall, for the class. And then we'll talk about the overall in a moment. So that was a really hard decision between Mike Angerino, who had a brilliant physique, and Charles Clermont, who we all know was such a champion, but he hadn't quite reached his peak in 1986, and he was very good, but he got a heck of a lot better in the future.
So Angerino had the definition, the conditioning,
yeah,
but Clermont had the size.
Well, he had the size, but there was something else about Clermont as well as that. It wasn't just that he was bigger, because he was not as hard, and he just didn't have the conditioning that Angerino had. But when Clermont did his double biceps pose, he looked the champion, and to me, he looked the winner, and that's why I gave him my vote after agonizing over who was the better man.
Yeah, I wish I could have seen Michael Angerino compete before, because I heard, you know, really thick, dense physique. Mike Quinn told me once, he goes, the guy was an animal on stage. And I know he had a great physique. He won many, many AAU titles. And that Mr. America back in the 80s was very, very tough to win. And so him winning it in 1985, that was a big victory for him.
I haven't said this in any of our chats so far, but I think that people should have a look at the video of the prejudging and see what they think between Mike Angerino and Charles Clermont, because it was such a hard decision. In my opinion, I'd like to have other people's opinions in the future as to what they thought, because it's all there on video and people can now look back on this all these years later. And that's the beauty of having a video record. You've got the moving history of the actual contest.
Yeah. So in the medium class, Eugene Lavinskaunt was the winner again. Peter Andreas, who I believe was from the United States.
Germany.
He was in second. And Steve Strunk, who was from the United States, yes, he took third place.
Yeah. Steve Strunk was a unique physique. I spoke to him quite a lot at this universe, and we did a photo and a film shoot, video shoot, and he was very smart. And I think he could have gone places. He just wasn't quite good enough to take out this class, but he had a wonderful shape. He had good symmetry definition. Peter Andreas was a more massive type of physique and mature. Eugene Lavinskaunt, very experienced, had been around for years. And so he took out the class. But unfortunately, Stephen Strunk is no longer with us.
Yeah, I believe he committed suicide, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. What was it about Stephen Strunk's physique that was so unique, Wayne?
I saw some sort of similarities to the style of physique that Frank Zane presented.
So, oh, really?
He wasn't the biggest, but he had lovely shape, the way everything tied together. So he had what you'd call the old-fashioned beautiful physique. And I felt that that sort of look didn't get enough recognition. And that's why I hoped that he would have kept going and been a winner in this competition.
It's funny because if you go back to the NAVA contest in the 70s, that kind of physique did get a lot of recognition in NAVA, you know, with Chris Dickerson and Zane and, you know, those guys.
Yeah. It was unfortunate that he deserved to have greater accolades and greater achievement, but it didn't turn out that way.
So the short class, tell me about Sammy in
Ioannidis.
Ioannidis. Okay. Where was he from?
He's an Australian from Melbourne and Greek heritage. A rock-hard, massive, Herculean physique. I can't say enough good things about Sammy, not just because he's an old friend, but he had a wonderful physique, short. I'm not sure of his height. I'm going to guess, say, 5'4", maybe. Gym owner, a legend in Australia. I felt that when it came to the overall, between Charles Clermont, Eugene and Lavinskaunt and Sammy Ioannidis, I had Sammy Ioannidis as second overall.
Wow, okay. And then Larry Bernstein from Chicago, I didn't know he placed second so many years. I mean, it looks like 3 years in a row he got second place again in the short class. Larry had a great physique. I saw him compete on the local level many times. Real thick, good shape, real good short bodybuilder.
Yes, I remember a funny story about Larry Bernstein. At that time, the competitors were able to see the judging sheets. I think it was the day after the contest, and I had given Larry Bernstein third place. And he asked me, why did you place me third? And I said, well, that's not too bad. You got second. I mean, I was only one off the final decision because naturally bodybuilders are upset at their placings. They always want to place higher if they're not the winner. But I didn't mind the comment. And Larry Bernstein, I'll say now, he had a fantastic physique. And Sammy Ioannidis had a just slightly better physique. And you see the emergence here of Victor Terra from USA, who went on to be an absolute champion, and he got third in the short class.
And Terry Phillips started dropping down. He got fourth.
Yeah.
But the overall, again, went to Charles Clermont.
Well, yes. As I was saying, I thought that Charles Clermont, because he was good enough to win his class, I thought he was definitely the best winner of the three class winners, and that's why I voted for him in the overall, and he was an outstanding champion.
All right, so let's talk about the pro division that year, Wayne. Lance Dreher, after three tries now in his third attempt, he wins the pro division at the 86th NAVA Universe. No Brian Buchanan and no Eduardo Kowak. So this must have been the year, I think, that Kowak went over to the IFBB.
I think that's correct. And I'm not saying that Lance Dreher won only because the other guy or guys weren't there. Lance was just fantastic that year. I think it was the best I saw him look.
He said that was about his best condition ever.
Well, I'm glad he said that because I totally agree. And I followed Lance's career very closely. I remember him being, I think it was in the 1980 Mr. America back in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I thought then this guy, I thought he was a champion. And I could never understand why he didn't place higher. But it might have been, as you said, his waist might have been just a little bit wide compared to some other people. But he took a very strong victory here in 1986 in the pro class over an outstanding Italian called Piero Venturato. And he had a classic, clean-cut, tight physique, but Lance Dreher was bigger and better.
And then Vince Brown was third, and look who was in fourth, Thierry Pestel, a future IFBB star.
Yes, well, Thierry Pestel, he had a thick physique. I remember he had great upper body, he had good posing, and he had impact. And he did very well after this contest, and he went on to achieve good things. And I see Rufus Howard's there, very consistent, and Bill Richardson. Well, this wasn't his best contest, but he was there, and he came in sixth place.
All right, so now we go to 1987, and I'm not too familiar with the overall winner in the amateur division here, Wayne, Basil Francis.
Okay, we were talking about this guy. Just, I think it was yesterday with Ian Harrison.
Oh, really?
And yes, Ian Harrison said that Basil Francis was a monster. He was big, he was tall, he was huge. I remember Basil Francis told me in an interview he was a rugby player, which is, well, everybody knows rugby. Mm-hmm. And he told me that there were times when other teams, when they saw he was on the opposition team, refused to play against him. He looked domineering and awesome. He was just a big, very big black physique from Yorkshire. I think Ian said that he lived in Leeds. And when I worked with Basil Francis, he was living in Bradford, which is another part of Yorkshire. So, yeah, he was just a huge guy. I just can't quickly think of a physique today in, say, USA who reminds me of him. But when he came out on stage, he was one of the guys where you said straight away, well, there's the winner who's second, third, and fourth.
Wow. And Gary Luer from Australia was in second. Owen Neal from the United Kingdom was third.
Tiki Joubert.
Tiki Joubert from South Africa was fourth.
Yeah. And you notice the young Eddie Elwood.
Eddie Elwood was in sixth place. Yeah.
So
in the medium class, Steve Strong, who we were just talking about, he wins. He wins first place in the medium class.
He came back, as I hoped he would, because I said I thought he was deserving of top honors, and he came back with this beautifully neat physique, symmetrical, beautiful posing, a unique sort of a look that he had. It was all his own style. And of course, there he beat another good English physique, Simon Lancaster. And Joe Miko dropped this year down to fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit unlucky. I personally had him, in my opinion, up around about second, but he came in fourth. And you move down to the short class, and I'll let you talk about Jerry Scalise, because I'm sure you know of him being he was from New York, but he was a legend in USA, I think.
Yeah, Jerry had a great physique. I remember him from the 1980s doing the AAU Mr. America, and I think he did the AAU Mr. World. And I didn't realize he was a NAVA Mr. Universe winner, but he won the short class here, and great leg development. And he's still pretty active on Facebook now. I see a lot of his posts. He's doing some coaching out there. So, yeah, he's a good guy. I'm glad he won his class. And he beat Sammy Ioannidis.
Yes. Well, yeah, he was, I would say this, he was a little bit too massive in his overall physique. They were both short guys, Sammy Ioannidis. As I said, an outstanding physique and won this class the year before. But Jerry Scalise, well, he was just overpowering and dominant. And so he was a worthy winner of that class. And then poor old Larry Bernstein again. There he is in third place, and there's Terry Phillips in fourth.
Yeah. So for the overall, do you think Basil was an easy winner?
I prefer not to use the word easy, but I'll say he was a clear winner, and I totally agreed with that decision. And the other two class winners were all outstanding, but Basil was literally dominant because of his size, and he did have conditions. So he had a very good package.
All right, now we go over to the pro division, and one thing I noticed looking at this pro lineup, they had 15 competitors, which was very unusual.
Yeah.
Mostly times they had like four, maybe five.
Well, mostly six.
Yes.
Yeah. But this was 15, and they were outstanding competitors. If you look right down the bottom of the list, there's Robert Reese.
Right.
And he was no mean competitor. He was a great physique. That doesn't mean that he was last. He's just last mentioned out of the top 10 who were placed. I'm not sure where the others placed. That was an incredible year.
So the winner was Oli Vanas from Russia, who was also with the IFBB for a little bit. I remember he did the 1984 Mr. Universe that Mike Christian won.
Yeah.
So he goes over to NABBA also, and he wins, and he beats Jeff King. Now, how did Jeff King look? This is 4 years after he won the America. So. Yeah.
This particular year, they held the NABBA Pro as a separate event.
Oh, really?
Yes, it wasn't held at the amateur event. It was held up in the north of England. I think it was held in Leeds and possibly Harrogate. But it was held up north, and they had an amateur event put on with it at the same time. But Oli Vanas, I just have to slightly correct you about the Russia thing. He was born in Estonia, which is one of the Baltic states, which was then controlled by the USSR. And then he later went to live in Finland, where he lives today.
Okay.
So I'm not sure clearly how you would describe what place he was representing. So I'll say he's representing Estonia, which is really, I believe, the place of his birth.
Okay.
And it's pretty, well, relatively unknown. It's such a tiny country. He had better condition than Jeff King on this particular day. I would think Jeff King probably came in as the favourite. Based on 1983, but Jeff didn't look as good as 83, and Oli Vanas took that title. I was doing the video of the event, and I was barracking for Jeff King, being an old friend, but I wasn't terribly surprised when Oli Vanas got the title, and he was a very good winner. He just had a fantastic package on the day, and it was a little bit better than what Jeff King presented.
And then Eugene Levenskop was third, and Vince Brown was in fifth.
Yes. And, well, Vince, we said, had this fantastic upper body. And then there was a guy from Austria called Alfred Krautgartner. I noticed you left that one for me to pronounce.
Yeah.
and he had a fantastic physique too. He was a blonde guy, rock-hard physique, looked like he was carved out of granite, that type of a physique. And then you've still got Rufus Howard in there, down at seventh, and Piero Venturato, Thierry Pastel. There was very good prize money, I remember, in the 1987 universe being held in a special city location. And I think that helped attract the extra competitors.
Oh, okay. That's probably why they had so many competitors. Yeah, Oli Vanas, I just remember him from being in the Muscle Builder magazine, and they would say, here's a new threat from Russia. Russia's going to have the new bodybuilders. So
yeah.
I remember they would always mention him as the guy. And then I remember when he finally competed in the 1980s against Mike Christian at the 1984 Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
All right, so now let's go, Wayne, to 1988 and another huge lineup. I'm looking at the list here of a lot of guys in this contest. So
yeah.
NABBA was still attracting a lot of competitors and quite a few from the USA who competed in the AAU. But Victor Terra, who we just talked about a little bit, he won the overall. Who was the guy who won the Linky Wilson?
Yeah, he was a big black guy from England.
Okay.
1988, a lot of money was being put in the Napa direction. If my memory's correct, the sponsor was Super Body Power, which was a company from Yorkshire, and they had very good lineups and very good competitors, and the contest was being held up there in Yorkshire. And Linky Wilson was just a very big, he was like a different version of Basil Francis. He was a tall guy, big guy. Gary Lewis from Australia, who was the Australian champion, had to settle for second again. And then and Eddie Irwin is coming up. He's in fourth, tall class. And then you probably know a little bit about Casey Kacharik.
Yeah, Casey was another big AAU guy. Always did well in AAU competitions. And so now he wins the medium class in 1988. And Stefano...
Ciraldi
from Italy. Yeah. He was in second. And Simon Lancaster from the United Kingdom was in third place.
Yeah, so I thought Casey was a very good winner too. He was a terrific physique. He had a package. He had everything. I don't remember him having any really weak points. And he came in good condition. I remember Bob Gruskin's involved with Casey. Coaching him.
Yeah.
And Bob Gruskin's boys always came in great shape.
Yeah. Bob was doing a lot of the guys on the East Coast.
Yeah. So that was Casey's very good year. And then you go down below to the short class, Victor Terra. And I had seen Victor before. I'd filmed him winning the Junior Mr. America.
Oh, really? Okay.
In Memphis, Tennessee. And that was the first time I'd seen Victor Terra. And I was very impressed there. And here he is at the NABBA Universe. And did you ever see Victor compete?
No, I obviously know of Victor, and I've seen a lot of pictures of him, but I regret that I never saw him compete because everybody who's seen this guy said he was one of the most outstanding bodybuilders ever. So describe his physique a little bit, Wayne, and tell like our listeners what made him so unique.
Okay, if you can imagine Lee Labrada.
Yeah.
Try and imagine Lee Labrada with a little bit more size and still shredded. You've got a rough idea that Victor Terra was an awesome, smaller, shorter physique. Now, I shouldn't emphasize shorter. Awesome physique of a smaller stature. And Victor Terra was one of my all-time favorite physiques because of his size, his shape. He's a good-looking guy. He stood out on stage, and he was just outstanding. And I see you having a quick look at his record. And Junior Mr. America overall winner, 1985. So that was the first time I'd seen him. And I wasn't surprised at his recognition by NABBA because you don't have to be tall with NABBA to be a champion. And he was a shorter guy who could dominate over everyone else.
He did win the Mr. America too, right, overall, I believe?
Just looking at his...
Says he won the Mr. America in his short class in 85, but that's your Antorino one.
Yeah, and in 85, though, he was junior overall winner, as I said.
Yeah, maybe he didn't.
Maybe not, but he was a teenage Mr. America. I see at the very top of his achievements.
Yeah, I remember he was great at a really young age.
Yeah, and he was also a wonderful poser.
Oh, really?
So he had a very good package of everything. And then if we move down to the bottom of these results, there's Ian Harrison.
Yeah.
Winning the Junior Mr. Universe, NABBA Universe. He was very young. I just forget what he said his age was, 18 or 19. And he beat a big guy called Leonard St. Cyr, and there were some very good young bodybuilders in that junior class. And Ian Harrison went on to very quickly become quite a name in the IFBB, the pro IFBB, but we can talk about that a bit later. So he had a very quick transition from NABBA champion to British champion IFBB to pro ranks, and he was a pro at the age of 20, he told me.
Okay. How did Sammy look compared to Victor Terra?
Well, that's a tough one because Victor Terra was instantly, in my opinion, a champion. Sammy Ioannidis was a champion too, but Victor Terra was a champion at another level. He had everything in the correct proportion. He just looked perfect, and the judges agreed, and that's why he came out the winner.
Okay. All right. In the pro division in 88, Charles Claremont comes back and wins. And Jerry Scalise was in second. Basil Francis was third. Marlon Darton, who was a big winner in the AAU, I remember that name.
Yeah.
He was fourth. Eugene Lavinscount was fifth. And Jeff King drops down to 6th with Rufus Howard 7th, Ian Lawrence in 8th. So a lot of former champions placing kind of low.
Yeah. Well, first thing is to talk about Charles Clermont.
Yeah.
He was vastly improved on his 86 condition and form when he won the overall amateur title. And here he is in 88. He was definitely in a class of his own. Jerry Scalise's great, but Charles Clermont was absolutely outstanding and maybe as good a condition as I ever saw Charles Clermont present on stage. So
Wow. He
was just an absolute dominant winner there. And then the others, Jerry and Basil and Marlon, et cetera, they were just there to find out who were going to take the other placings.
Yeah, that's why it's great that we're doing this wrap-up like this and talking about these competitions, because if it wasn't IFBB, a lot of fans of bodybuilding may not have seen these guys, seen the pictures or the video of how they looked. So you were there, Wayne, and you saw Charles on stage. And like you said, that was one of the best physique you ever saw at that particular time.
That's right. And Charles had this fantastic torso development from his abs. He had a wonderful six-pack, eight-pack. Flaring lats, huge arms, tiny waist, good legs, good posing. He just looked fantastic on stage. It's hard to describe him to people that never saw him at his peak. Wayne D'Amelio said to me later that Charles Clermont was his all-time favourite physique. Didn't say the best ever. He said his favourite physique. He said he loved that look because he was the epitome of what a perfect bodybuilder should look like.
Yeah, I could see that because he was massive, but he was super sharp and he had great shape, like great, just well developed, great symmetry and shape throughout his whole physique.
Right down to the calves, everything was there. So he was a wonderful champion.
All right, so let's go to the next year.
89. We'll do 89 and 90 and then we'll call it a day. So it'll be perfect. 89. Oh, yeah, we got another American here.
All right, so now we go to 1989, and the amateur winner this year is another really great AAU competitor from America, Matt Dufresne. I remember that name also. Another short class winner who wins the overall.
Yes, Matt Dufresne, you could say in a way, that must have greatly upset Gary Lua, because Gary Lua had finally worked his way up to winning his high class in the Navi universe after many attempts. So Gary's number one. There's Matt Dufresne winning number class 3. So it comes to the overall pose down. I know we're jumping ahead here, and I'm thinking, is Gary Lua going to pull this off? Is he going to win an overall Navi universe at last? No, it wasn't to be. Matt Dufresne, well, he had a fantastic package of symmetry, size. Gary Lua had a good size and good condition, but the judges preferred the look of Matt Dufresne, and he was a winner. And I thought it was very close between him, Casey Kucharik, who won the medium class, and Gary Lua from Australia, who won the tall class.
Yeah, so Casey Kucharik wins again. So he won his class a couple times.
Yes.
At the Mr. Universe, which I wasn't really aware of, but he did have a great physique.
Yeah, Casey was consistent. I said he never came to a contest in other than his best condition, and that was rewarded. And then you have the emergence in the tour class of another champion in Sean Davis from England. He went on and had an interesting, a good career, but not a long career. And then down in the short class, there was a very good black English guy called Robert Wall, and he's right there behind Matt Dufresne. And in the juniors, we had our first ever junior universe winner, Michael Milksham, from Victoria, Australia.
Oh, okay. So you think Matt Dufresne was a convincing winner then in the overall?
I would say he was a worthy winner, and he was not that far ahead of Gary Lua, who I thought would have also been a worthy winner. So that year, I thought the three high-class winners were incredibly close, because Casey Kucharik could have taken the overall. So that was a pretty tough year. I'm glad I wasn't judging.
And then in the pro division, Clermont wins again. He comes back and he wins again. Now this time he beats Eduardo Kovac. So that's interesting. Eduardo Kovac comes back after, I think, trying the IFBB for several years. didn't really have much success. So he goes back to the Nava universe to try and repeat his victories again because he had such great success at the Nava universe. But he gets beat by Charles Clairmont.
And there's also Basil Francis in the field taking third place. And you know what I think of Basil Francis. He was a legend and he was such an amazing physique and a huge amateur winner. But Charles Clairmont, to come back and to dominate Ed Carlock, is a pretty good effort. And again, Charles Clairmont had no faults, no weaknesses. And I'm not saying Ed Carlock had faults or weaknesses, but Clairmont had the better waist and the better taper, the cleaner lines. And I think he was a good winner. And Ed Carlock was a good second place getter.
Yeah, I'm surprised Charles didn't do better in the IFBB because he was, but he was competing at a very, very tough time in the IFBB in the early 1990s when you had Flex Wheeler, Kevin Lavroni, Sean Ray, Dorian Yates, Paul Dillette, Lee Labrada. So it was incredible depth, you know. So I could see why he kind of got lost. But even today, people talk about Charles Clairmont as, you know, just one of the best physiques ever. I mean, he just had an amazing physique.
And also, too, we were talking about this 89 Pro Universe. Charles Clairmont, in my opinion, looked better there than he looked in his pro contest outside of the UK. I mean, Charles Clairmont did win the 93 IFBB English Grand Prix. This is a few years after our 1989 chat. But Charles kept his condition very well in UK, but I never think he looked as good when he competed outside of UK. So in 1989, he looked absolutely fantastic in the Nava universe.
It's funny now because now we're looking at some of these guys like, you know, Bertel Fox, Eduardo Kowak. It seemed like they were at their best in the Nava universe. And then when they went over to the IFBB, they just didn't have the same impact. But like you said, they probably weren't at their best either.
No, they couldn't seem to duplicate their condition that I would see on the Nava stage. And in particular, I do feel that Charles, although he never got any recognition or much in USA, he didn't get enough pre-publicity and he didn't, in my opinion, present the best package that I saw on the Nava stage. So there are reasons partly why Charlie didn't do better, and I would have loved to see him dominate at the Olympia or in the USA or in contests outside of Europe, but it just wasn't to be.
Yeah. All right, Wayne, let's wrap it up then with the 1990 Nava Mr. Universe, and the amateur winner was Peter Reed from the medium class, and in that medium class, he beats out Casey Kucharik. Tell me a little bit about Peter Reed because I really don't remember him too much.
Okay, well, Peter Reed was a black bodybuilder. I think he was from the London area, and I think he was in the police force. He had what I call a good overall physique. There was nothing dominant. He had a great upper body. His legs were good. He looked good when he hit his double biceps poses. He was a physique that I call, I won't say he was a good middle-of-the-road type of physique, because the people that he beat this particular year, when it comes to the overall, he was not up against some of the greatest of all time. So he just had a very, very good physique, and I don't mean that in any way disrespectful. So that's how I would describe Peter Reed. He had something of everything, and he had it in good proportions, and he was a good winner.
And then that Robert Wall that you were mentioning just a minute ago, he wins the short class. And Terry Fisher was still competing. He's second place.
Terry Fisher, though, is actually, you're thinking Terry Phillips.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Terry Fisher was a very good English shorter bodybuilder.
Okay.
Rock hard, competed for many years. And then he later on, I remember him in the pro ranks. But Casey Kucharik, well, he just wasn't good enough on the day to finish in front of Peter Reed. And then in the tall class, Sean Davis, who was something of a British hero. The English public loved Sean Davis. There was just something about him. He had a unique charisma. I probably would say you don't know a lot about him.
No. I remember the name.
Yes, but he was a very good bodybuilder, and he took out the tour class.
And Robert Harrop, he was from the United States, wasn't he?
I'm not sure, but Peter Reed, as we said, he was good enough to take out that overall title. Now the pro class.
Yeah, the pro class, Charles Clairmont wins again. but he beats out Victor Terra. So that had it. And Basil Francis was third. So that had to be a great post down.
That was an incredible battle because you had two guys at the absolute peak of their condition, their form, and it came down to this. When you've got a fantastic big guy and a fantastic shorter guy, who's going to win?
The big guy.
Correct. And so there was nothing wrong with that result. They were both absolutely incredible that day. I can remember Charlie Claremont's condition, and Victor Terra was looking as good as he ever looked. Yet I think that Charlie Claremont was probably a good 6 or so inches taller than Victor Terra. And so he had the domineering look, and he took out the title with Basil Francis, a very good third-place finisher.
And do you have this this contest in 1990?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember it with great pleasure because to see two guys, two great champions, such as Charles Claremont and Victor Terra, going toe-to-toe in the pose down and then finishing first and second, that was one of the great years. There are only five I see mentioned here in the pro division, but the standard was absolutely incredible with the top three. And the guy who finished fourth was also outstanding, Claudio Mastacci from Italy. But the top three, and with Victor and Charlie, I would rate that as one of the all-time battles. Even though Charlie, I felt, was always going to win, it was fantastic to see these two amazing physiques side by side.
Wow. Yeah, I might have to get that tape from you, or that DVD.
It's worth having another look.
Yeah. When we start talking about these old competitions and we see these guys, like amazing physiques like Victor Terra and Charles Claremont, and you realize they were at their peak, it's got to be amazing to see that on stage, on video. All right, Wayne, well, let's mention your website. If all of these competitions are on download or DVD, so that's gmv.com.au, correct?
Yes, that's where you can look for all the history and then all the results in great detail and photos. And then if you want the downloads, go to our downloads website, gmvbodybuilding.com, and you can put in any name that you're looking for or any year, and it'll pull up the contest, and you can have it in your own computer 20 minutes after you've clicked on I want this to download. So you can enjoy all these great contests and you don't have to wait for the DVD to arrive in the post.
All right. Well, Wayne, thank you very much for joining me again. And it was great to do this in person instead of you on the other side of the world. And we will keep talking again about the NABBA universe. But thanks for all these great memories. And you were there. So it really makes it more special because, you know, we got firsthand account of these events.
And thanks, John, for having me here in your home. It's rather weird to be sitting here with you instead of on the other side of the world doing it by Skype. And the next time when we do this, we'll finish it off for the years 1991 right up to the present.
All right. Sounds good, Wayne. All right. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Wayne Galash for joining us. And be sure to join us next week when we talk about the history of the Mr. Olympia contest. And I want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine, Redcon One, and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode and this season of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.